Good morning. It is 7:49 and you are listening to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. Today is Tuesday, August 7th, 2012. I'm Holly Keene and this is Raven News. Yesterday morning you heard a story about the Blue Lake Dam project here in Sitka. Bids from contractors were between $30 and $50 million above engineering estimates, and city officials are sorting out their options. Another Southeast community is also wrestling with that problem. The same engineering firm prepared a report on the Whitman Lake Hydro Project in Ketchikan. Construction bids there were $12 million above estimates. As KRBD's Lila Carey reports, the Ketchikan City Council has put off a decision about the fate of the project, but it's not dead yet.
While some council members said their initial reaction was to scrap the project, they all agreed to give city managers and project officials 3 weeks to look into options. The council will meet August 28th in special session to learn what those options might be. Council member Deanne Carlson says the city shouldn't make a quick decision to abandon the project.
I think that we really owe it to the community to really take the time to look into it and get some more answers. There's been a lot of time, effort, and money invested in this project to date, and I just think it really behooves us to take some time to really understand the options, investigate whatever options might be available, because these are really serious decisions that have to be made.
Council member Matt Olson questions the validity of the engineer's estimate from Hatch Associates.
Yeah, I was telling Marty earlier, I kind of feel like the general manager who signed the star pitcher and he just blew out his elbow, both knees, and got an Achilles tendon injury. And this is terrible. And I look at this, and I have some issues with what Hatch is doing. I have some real questions about how we can proceed with this group doing it. And I know we're way down the line, but I have a serious question about that.
Hatch engineers blame much of the cost discrepancy on the rising cost of steel and a rerouted access road. The estimate for Whitman was about $14.3 million. The lowest bid submitted by Ketchikan's Dawson Construction was $26.4 million. Hatch and Dawson came up with a rough plan to reduce the scope of the project in hopes of bringing it down to the approved budget. The revised plan would delete the larger of the two generators at the dam. Removing that unit also would eliminate the need for some related items, such as diverting the nearby Achilles Creek. However, it also would reduce the dam's power output. Originally, Whitman was expected to add 4,600 kilowatts of capacity. That would drop to 700. City Manager Carl Amelon says the city will find out whether the federal license deadline can be extended.
One of the first calls we're going to be making tomorrow will be to FERC to have an in-depth discussion about what constitutes meeting their threshold. If there's any way, and I'm not saying there is, and I don't want to mislead anybody, but if there's any way around that March 16th, 2013 deadline, that opens up a whole lot more in terms of the possibilities that may be out there relative to keeping the project as envisioned, the 4.6 megawatt project.
To build the dam, the city obtained a license from the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. That license requires construction to begin by March 16th. According to KCAW, Hatch also underestimated construction costs for Sitka's Blue Lake Hydro expansion. That estimate was between $45 and $50 million, but when bids were opened on Tuesday, the lowest was more than $84 million. In Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
The U.S. Forest Service late last month upheld the agency's decision on a timber sale on Kuprinoff Island near Petersburg. Four different administrative appeals were filed over the decision to log and build roads on the Lindenberg Peninsula. Joe Vicknicki reports.
The Tonka timber sale decision authorizes logging of up to 38.5 million board feet of timber on over 2,000 acres of Kuprinoff's Lindenberg Peninsula across the Wrangell Narrows from Petersburg. The sale would mean construction of more than 1.5 miles of new road, as well as 7.5 miles of temporary road, along with a 3 to 5 acre sort yard. The harvest would happen on the Tonka Road system in an area that's already seen cutting in the past. Regional Forester Beth Pendleton on July 23rd affirmed the forest supervisor's decision to go forward with the timber harvest. Ray Massey, a spokesperson for the Forest Service's Alaska region, says the sale was designed to use the existing road system on Kuprinoff, and he says the proximity of the sale to Petersburg was a big issue as well.
We know it will support direct and indirect employment, you know, by supplying, you know, personnel, goods and services to the people that are actually, you know, working the timber. And the area has been very attractive in the past to other purchasers because it has had a successful timber sales from the project in the area in the past. So we know that it's a known producer, that it was, you know, a moneymaker for other timber sales. So we expect the same, and that's also one of the reasons that this, how the sale was put together.
Logs from the sale are expected to be put in the water and rafted to another location, and that's been part of the controversy of this sale. The Forest Service has applied for and received state permits for log raft storage at Alexander Bay, also known as the Pothole. It's on the southern end of the Wrangell Narrows. Local crabbers are concerned about log debris damaging crab habitat and the exclusion of fishermen from the area. Two of the appeals on the sale noted that concern. Massey says the regional forester directed the agency on the Tongass to review issues raised during permitting with the state's Department of Natural Resources and Department of Environmental Conservation.
And they needed to determine whether the results of the analysis the state conducted of the effects there on Alexander Bay for log storage is consistent with our analysis completed for the sale.
That work needs to happen before the timber can be offered for sale by the Forest Service. Barging and timber companies say use of the pothole is necessary to get log rafts through the strong tidal currents of the Wrangell Narrows. The four appeals faulted the depth of the Forest Service's environmental analysis and raised concerns about the agency's consideration of deer habitat, climate change, timber economics, and other issues. One of the appeals was filed by five environmental organizations. They asked for the project to be canceled, saying the agency's environmental review for the logging does not meet requirements of federal law. Bruce Baker is a board member with the Greater Southeast Alaska Conservation Community, one of the appellants. He says the group is disappointed with the decision.
The level of analysis provided in the final EIS, Environmental Impact Statement, was inadequate. It simply isn't the detailed statement that the National Environmental Policy Act requires a federal agency like the Forest Service to come up with. They didn't basically review the environmental impacts with a consideration that to the fullest extent possible that the law requires.
Other appeals came from local residents Dave Randrup and Dave Beebe, and one came from a man in Idaho. The Forest Service did not consider Randrup's appeal. The agency says he did not submit that in time in the proper place. Petersburg City Council voted to support the timber sale last December, at the same time noting the local concerns over deer habitat and log storage. The timber harvest is expected to create over 150 jobs. Viking Lumber of Klawock has logged in the area in the past and could be the only bidder for a large sale from Tonka. Barring any legal challenges, the first sale from the Tonka decision could be offered as soon as this fall. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicnicki.
Some black bears, especially those on the coast of British Columbia, carry a genetic anomaly that makes their fur white. They're popularly called spirit bears. KSTK's Ann Hillman spoke to bear biologist Wayne McCrory, who's been studying the bears and trying to protect them for the past 30 years.
According to a legend of some of the First Nations people of British Columbia, the white-faced black bears were created as a reminder.
And there's a beautiful legend about the spirit bear that comes from the Tsimshians. And it goes along the lines that Raven, the creator, went to this island, which we know today as Prince's Royal Island, and he went amongst all of the black bears, and he created every 10th one white as a reminder of the last ice age. It's a beautiful, captivating legend that speaks, I think, of oral history and native presence on the coast for thousands of years, going back to recognition of the ice age.
That's biologist Wayne McCrory. He started studying the Kermode black bears almost 30 years ago. He says it's unclear exactly how many white-faced black bears are in the wild, but studies suggest about 300 to 400 carriers of the white-faced gene live in a concentrated area off the coast of BC. The gene is recessive, meaning mothers of any color can have white cubs so long as both parents are carriers of the gene. McCrory says that one behavioral study shows that the white bears may have an advantage when fishing.
The white Kermode bears caught more salmon because, especially during the gray daylight hours, the white bear was more camouflaged against the background sky than was the black bear to the fish in the stream. So it was much easier for white Kermodes to catch salmon.
They weren't always called spirit bears. Local people called them muskmal, which means white bear, but it's hard to pronounce. The Japanese called them ghost bears, but local people don't believe in ghosts. The unusual white bears were eventually dubbed spirit bears because the First Nations people and conservationists wanted them to be known by a name everyone could relate to. They used the bears as a mascot to protect the Great Bear Rainforest from excessive logging. Now the bears are an emblem for a new fight, the opposition to the proposed Northern Gateway Pipeline. If the project goes through, 220 tankers filled with heavy tar sands oil, called bitumen, would pass by the bears' home every year. McCrory says a major spill in that area, especially near Gribble Island, where many of the bears live, could devastate the spirit bear population.
All of the bears that use the island would use the shoreline at some point during their annual life cycle. So a major spill would quickly oil the whole shoreline, you know, significantly, and the bears would get contaminated by oil in a number of ways. They would get it from just walking along the oil shoreline and getting it on their fur, and then trying to lick the oil off their fur and suffering toxic effects. They would get it from contaminated marine foods, barnacles and mussels that absorb the oil, or just imagine thousands of seabirds and seals washing ashore that are oiled and the bears trying to feed on those. And then the other pathway that the bears would be affected would be by the impact of the oil on young salmon.
And you're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka.